I hope that the last page of your 800-page novel is missing. I hope that it rains if you leave the window down on your red Mustang. 'Cause every day ought to be a bad day for you. 'Cause every day ought to be a bad day for you. If you drop your keys, I hope there's a sewer somewhere very nearby.
Hey, it's Swan.
This is Chris.
And you're listening to Ink and Worm on Radio Free Brooklyn. Nisa is away. She's one of those people who traveled home for the holidays, so she's having fun, but also is going to send us a clip for a special start to the year. I'll go ahead and introduce this excitement now. We're going to knock the year off with our favorite books from last year. So by the end of the show, you will have 30 book recommendations. That's, if you read a book a week, that's 30 weeks of books.
Yeah, most people don't even do that much. So 30 books might be at least carry them through the year, maybe even to the next year.
It's possible. But here's the other thing is you might not want to read any of these books. So we're just going to tell you a little bit about them and why we loved them.
We should also add which book we hated this year, because I definitely have something in mind.
Well, you can do that.
Okay.
I don't like giving books a bad rap because I've never written a book. I don't imagine it's easy, so I have a hard time judging those who actually have a book, a thing in this world.
I would say the book I hated, anyone's capable of writing.
All right, we'll save that juicy bit for later. I guess with no further ado, let's tag team it. In no particular order, one of your favorite books from this year. 1 of 10.
Okay. So one book that I finally got around to reading was And Then There Were None by Agatha Christie. You ever read it?
Nope.
Oh, okay. Also goes by 10 Little Indians, so some of you...
Finally got around to reading because of its reputation?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Agatha Christie's...
Yeah, big very, name.
Yeah, only big name. And, you know, I'd heard plenty about And Then There Were None over the years. So it's always kind of been in the back of my mind that this is a book I should read sooner or later. And so I came across it in the library this summer and I was like, all right, now seems like the time.
Okay. So was it worth the wait?
Yeah. It definitely held up to its reputation.
What did you like about it?
The plotting's really great, you know, so it's basically 10 people on this island and, you know, they start getting murdered one by one. And so it's just a classic whodunit. And it's really, I mean, it's a small book. It's pretty pared down. There's no flowery language or anything. So it's really just like all plot. But it's a great story. And like the whole time you're like, who could it be? I don't know. And the ending is, dare I say, killer.
Unexpected. Killer.
Ouch. Thank you. I'll be here a week.
We need a soundboard.
Yeah, we're working on that.
Sounds compliments of Swan. I'll start with the first book on my list that's not in any order, so don't ascribe value. In terms of YA, if you're a YA reader, I really enjoyed the Riverman trilogy by Aaron Starmer. The three books are The Riverman, The Whisperer, and The Storyteller. And I wouldn't say it holds the same, like, place in my mind as, like, Harry Potter or, like, Chronicles of Narnia, those, like, epic,
yeah,
like, shaping.
It's hard to stand up to those.
But it dealt with a lot of interesting ideas that are similar to that, like, that kind of book, but in such a different way that I was really intrigued reading it, of just, like, the breadth of ideas that he incorporated and how it all... It worked, but it was still pretty bizarre. It was pretty bizarre reading. So you're like, what is happening? Definitely a couple times during the story. But I enjoyed reading that more than a lot of YA I've been reading lately. So it made it to the list.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I remember you talking about it. Disappeared
for a while.
Yeah.
That's how we know book's good. Swan's just gone.
Where's my swan? Yeah, I remember when you did occasionally emerge from the depths and talk about it, it sounded like a really interesting series.
And there's a glowing wombat.
Oh, yeah.
So you really can't go wrong with a book that features a glowing wombat. And its story is, like, tragic and beautiful. So there's that.
There should really be an annual book award for best book with a glowing wombat.
Yeah. Hang on, next book.
Okay, so another book I read this year I really loved was Far From the Madding Crowd by Thomas Hardy.
Also have not read. You're reading all these classics that I'm like, oh, I'll get around to them eventually.
Well, this is the year I got around.
Good job.
Yeah, I mean, unlike the Christie book, had not really been on my list. But then I'd seen the film adaptation of it in 2015, and that was wonderful. I mean, I love that film, so that got me really interested in reading the book.
Films do those to books. Films do that to books. I don't know.
Yeah. So yeah, I picked up also this summer, and wow, there's so much I loved about the book. I mean, the prose was wonderful. I really love the descriptions of, like, the countryside, because it mostly takes place, like, in the British countryside.
So, flowery language, just, like, beautiful words.
Yeah, and not like overly so. Not the kind of case
balanced.
Where. Yeah, not the canon case where an author is, like, clearly in love with their their vocabulary.
My words.
Everything I say is beautiful. But, yeah, just, like...
Or long. Sometimes yeah. You're just like, okay, how long are we going to describe this room? Can we get on with it?
It's like, I get it. It's a room. It's got things in it. but, yeah, just some really lovely language and some really beautifully drawn scenes. And I love the plot too. I mean, it's a romance plot, and I'm definitely romantic, so it appealed to me. And also, I mean, for the time that it came out, it has really strong female characters, so definitely felt a bit ahead of its time in that respect.
Nice.
Yeah, but I would highly recommend both the book and the film.
You're getting your bargains, money's worth listening to this podcast, let me tell you. My next book was recommended by a friend. I didn't ask her if I could say her name. So her name is R, and she was in love with Alexander Shea and kind of built him up in my mind. And then I was almost afraid to read something by him because I was afraid I wasn't going to like it as much as she did. And I actually read the book by him that she hadn't read, so it's kind of funny. But Queen of the Night by Alexander Shea. So beautiful. And it deals with the world of, like, opera. And it's like, obviously influenced by history and fact, but it's a work of fiction. And it's a world that I don't know too much about, so just to have exposure to a lot of the, I would look up some of the music that they would reference and different parts of, like, being an opera singer was just really fascinating to me. And then the story was just like, it was kind of one of those, like, so good it was painful. Like you kept being like, ah, and then it ends and you're still just like, ah.
So, just no words.
So no words for that book, but I disappeared into that one too. Yeah, that was the 3 days gone. So if you need a nice escapist, beautiful work of fiction, Queen of the Night by Alexander Shape.
Nice. Next one for me is another famous author. I promise not all the books on my list are well-known authors, but you know, there were a couple this year. So it's God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater by Kurt Vonnegut.
Mm.
So I had first been exposed to Vonnegut in high school with Cat's Cradle and Slaughterhouse-Five, and then for some reason I didn't get into him at the time, and I just kind of left him behind up until this past year, and then I really felt like I wanted to delve into his work. So I read a bunch of his novels, as well as a collection of short stories, and they're all fantastic. I mean, I definitely was struggling with this list to figure out which Vonnegut novel to choose. But God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater definitely stood out. It's hilarious. I mean, Vonnegut is always just so funny. And the protagonist, Mr. Rosewater, just gets in all sorts of kooky situations that, like, God, I would not be able to come up with them. A few people would be able to, but they're just hilarious. But at the same time, it was a really sweet and touching story. So
I just read my first Vonnegut book last month, actually.
Ooh, which one was that?
I read Man Without a Country for the upcoming Bushwick Book Club on January 17th. So we'll see what comes out of that.
Yeah. Well, I would definitely recommend God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater.
I like laughing. So yeah. It's always a good reason to read.
Yeah. And
some humor.
I'll say, I mean, any of his other books are great. So like Slaughterhouse-Five, Cat's Cradle, Player Piano, Jailbird, Galapagos, all highly recommend. So,
but not on this list.
Yeah, I mean, due to the constraints, yeah. But it seems like most of my books are coming with asterisks, so.
Yeah, I think most of my books are coming in groups, so 10 books, guys, with some extras thrown in. My next book is one you may remember from our episode a couple weeks ago, where we went to the International Culinary Center and talked to Sarah Quiros.
And ate breadsticks.
Quiros. And ate breadsticks and saw so many books about food that my brain was like broke down and had to like reset. But she turned me on to Ruth Reichel, who is like so fun to read. She's just like amazing stories that are like autobiographical. She also has fiction. But you're just reading this like, oh my gosh, this is like her life. This is crazy. And food and like, it's just so sexy and fun to read. So the books I read came in a pair on a Kindle. So it was Comfort Me with Apples and Tender at the Bone. And I was like going to pick one, but then they were both so good. And I'm just recommending them both to you instead. And another thing too is she ends her chapters with a recipe, which is really fun.
Ooh, yeah, I like that.
You could like, well, and then it infuses the story with such a different sensory experience, with like including flavor. Yeah. You know?
Do the recipes relate to the recipe? Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'll spoiler alert, but there's a transition where she's moving out of a relationship, and rather than talk about all the complexities of, you know, things changing and in different directions and yada yada yada, she just kind of sums it up in five recipes.
Oh, wow.
and then just talks about how, you know, she broke it down into seasons and seasons and recipes. So it's like summer, I just kept making this. Fall, I just kept making this. I don't remember the specifics. Like, she kept making soup for her mom one season, and so that was like that chapter. And just, it was kind of a poetic way to just like create snapshots.
Yeah, I never heard of that kind of structure before in a book. That's really cool.
Yeah, so that's definitely beautiful and new like a new reading experience to me as well. I would totally. Say like having read a lot. Foods included, and I've even read like food memoirs and like books by chefs, and you know, it's nice, but this was Ruth Reichel definitely was like a very satisfying experience reading food writing. So there you go.
Cool.
Put that in your basket. Add it to your to read list.
We should try some of those recipes.
Okay, I'll eat it if you make it.
Why can't we cook together?
Because our kitchen is small.
Oh, yeah. Good
point. And we have one knife.
Right. That could be a slight issue. Well, in the meantime, we'll move on to the next book on my list. Not by a well-known author. This is Plain Song by Kent Harif.
Oh, is this in Colorado, Wyoming?
Colorado, yeah. How'd you know?
You're telling me about it.
Oh yeah. we discuss books outside of the show
once,
maybe twice.
No, just the one time.
Okay. Yeah, also I didn't know anything about the book or about the author going in, but I took a look at it in the library, and I had spent one summer living and working in Buena Vista, Colorado, which is a tiny town. And the author, Kent, lives in Salida, which I spent a lot of time in because it's just about 30 minutes south of Buena Vista. So I was kind of intrigued by that because it was clearly a like small town Colorado story. And I was like, I do have some familiarity with those small towns. So yeah, that was a... It's just a... couple different storylines, couple different characters all living in this one town. And it was painful sometimes. I mean, it's really without
like raw emotion.
Yeah. And not,
but or like not, things not going right for someone.
Yeah. I mean, just the story is not melodramatic, but yeah, definitely like, things happen that even though the book is written in a very basic prose, you still like have these like great moments of emotion, and yeah, it's it really touched me in a lot of ways, and there's some really sweet moments that make you feel better about humanity, which is definitely something we need.
Noise.
Yeah.
This is not similar. My next book is Expect the Unexpected or You Won't Find It by Roger Van Oeck. And you're going to have to say the name of the philosopher. It's like The Wisdom of Heraclitus or something.
Heraclitus?
Heraclitus. Yeah, I read things. I don't pronounce them. Anyways, so it's kind of broken down, I think, into 21 different chapters. But I was adoring this book as I was reading through it. And I don't really own books. I love finding books and getting rid of them. And I love getting books from the library. But this was a book I read and I was like, I want to have this. Because there was so much, first of all, that you could just keep going back over it on repeat. And you probably get something new every time. And for like a creative mind or like trying to jumpstart a project or think about things abstractly or differently, it was like... a power tool. Like it that was like you know, you were telling me earlier today about if you want to stay smart through old age, you've got to push your brain and you've got to train it, not in like let me do these puzzles like Sudoku, but like yeah, learn another language. All right, for me, like this would be an appropriate thing of like it's kind of a meditation in a sense, because it's like, here's this idea, here's some examples, here's what Heraclitus.
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 It's It's all good.
You're probably saying it wrong too, maybe. Who knows? If we're saying things wrong, you should correct us because it's great fun. And then I don't say it wrong anymore sometimes. but yeah, so it's kind of a meditation in the sense of like really mulling something over and trying to understand it in a different way. And I wish I had a good example, but I don't. And I also love his other book's title is A Whack Inside the Head. It's a creative companion tool for people. I just love, I mean, a lot of times if you get smacked with an idea, it almost feels like that. You're like, whoa, wait, stop everything. I just had an idea. So, yeah, a nonfiction, fun, creative book.
Sweet.
Check it out.
Yeah, I'd say I'm definitely intrigued. Maybe I'll have to read it. If only I could lend it from someone.
I don't have it. I got from the library. So maybe we should buy it since I want to own it.
Yeah, we could probably do that. For anyone wants to buy it for us. And also
we're going to plug you. You should support your local bookstores, which is what we're going to do rather than just like pushing buttons on Amazon. Because we need to save the planet and saving local bookstores is part of the steps. Carry on.
Yeah, local bookstores are pretty great. So my next book, along similar lines to the previous one, it's The Heart is a Lonely Hunter by Carson McCullers.
Mm, have you read both it? Made the list.
Yeah.
Carry on.
And yeah, I mean, I liked it for similar reasons to Plain Song, just, you know, a really rich portrait of a group of characters all living out their respective lives in this southern town. And as you might guess from the title, like, a lot of it is about loneliness and trying to find connection, something that, you know, we obviously all struggle with at one point or another. So, yeah, it was definitely also a very emotionally powerful book.
You had like a year of poignant reads.
Yeah.
Humor and some poetry thrown in. Speaking of poetry, did you see what I did there?
Oh yeah, I heard you.
Oh, yeah. Did you hear what I did there?
Yes.
Poetry. So my next favorite book from the year is Nine Gates: Entering the Mind of Poetry by Jane Hirschfeld. It was hard to read. I was grinding through the sentences. She uses kind of complex wording and long words, but it wasn't frustrating, if that makes sense. So it was like hard. Sometimes I'd have to reread a sentence like three or four times and then be like, oh, I get what she just said. But it's really powerful. If you are a poet and you haven't read anything by Jane Hirschfeld, I would highly recommend her. If you're a poet, you might have heard of her already, but she just kind of, so this is Nine Gates: Entering the Mind of Poetry. She breaks into nine different chapters, like gateways into poetic thought and to creating poems and to reading poems and understanding poems. But reading this complex writing was almost like reading complex poems in addition to like the poems she would include. So it wasn't like a, let me just relax and read this book. It was something I had to be awake and alert and engaged with, but it was powerful and beautiful, and I loved every moment, and I felt inspired and appreciative, and like I just was stunned frequently reading that book because it was stunning. So that was The Nine Gates: Entering the Mind of Poetry. And I'm currently reading another book by her called The Ten Windows, which is another poetry-centric book. And I'm in love with it as well, but that's this year.
Well, you know, a year
you
from now.
You gotta wait for a year. Yeah. It's gonna make the list.
Maybe, I don't know. It's a full year. You're reading it now.
I kind of adore. And I might reread just because I feel like maybe similar, but in a different way. There's just so much there. Like, I want to be a sponge. I want to like memorize every word because I just like wanna know this rather than just read it.
So. That's awesome.
Next, on Chris's list.
So this is a kind of different book, and I'll start by telling a little anecdote about how it came into my possession. So I work at a high school, for those who don't know, and over the summer, this box of books showed up in the high school's library. Someone had just dropped it off, and it was just like, they hadn't even tried to organize it or anything. So there's just like all this random crud in there. And libraries aren't really like book deposits. You can't just, I mean, obviously this person's intentions were good, but also just like so random. And since not too many people are there in the summer, I was leafing through this box and I came across this book, which was The Reader's Companion to Alaska, edited by Alan Ryan. And it's a series of travel essays about Alaska. I've been just picked it out of this box. Seemed pretty random, but I was kind of intrigued because I would love to go to Alaska, and I love traveling in general. So a compendium of travel essays seemed of interest, and it ended up being this amazing book. There's just like a really wide range of subjects in these essays and writing styles.
How substantial is it? Is it big book, little book, medium?
It was pretty thick. Yeah. Probably like, I want to say maybe 400 pages or so.
Okay.
But a book that just kind of I came into randomly, I was amazed at just like how powerful the writing was, how moving some of those pieces were.
And it made you want to go to Alaska?
Yeah, no, I want to go before, but after reading that, I was like, man, if one place can inspire all these different people in all these different ways, then it's definitely a place worth visiting.
Nice. My next book is Anamkara by John Donahue. Similar thread to poetry, but more like how to be a better human being, maybe. So in Celtic tradition, an Anamkara is like a soul friend, or just like a friend. I don't know how to describe it without quoting, but it's just like, I don't know. And then it's kind of spiritual, but not dogmatic. I'm not religious, but for me, if I had to pick like a religion, I would probably pick up this book and like say, this is my religion, because I, again, I just really loved the writing. He is a beautiful writer. I'd heard of him, John O'Donohue. That's how you say it. I've heard him, and he's a poet, and he writes a lot. But to read this book was just a really pleasant and spiritual experience for me. And this is coming from someone who's very cynical and kind of agnostic. And it's tied into Irish history and wisdom, and so like those blessings and themes of friendship, solitude, love, death. I'm cheating on Goodreads a little bit because I read this almost a year ago, last February, I believe. But it's just kind of that longing we have to like understand our place in the world and how to truly connect to other beings. And it's poetry. He has different like prayers or blessings at the end of every chapter. And I just was like, I don't know, felt settled and peaceful reading it. It felt like how, I don't know if you've had like a child, like a childhood religious experience, but it felt like going to church before church was tainted by like flaws and like the business of religion. Getting really weird describing this book.
I think you're selling it pretty well.
It's kind of that pure, just like seek light, seek good, seek the things that like bring that into this world and try and become a person who is bringing that into this world more often. And obviously coming from a background, I'm a Welsh a little bit, somewhere in my blood there's Welsh, so that I think spoke to my blood like
yeah, definitely. Sweet, that sounds pretty amazing. So my next book, back to famous authors.
Zing.
Yeah.
Enough of these no like unknowns.
Yeah. Hey, the last book showed up in a cardboard box, so at least that was bounces out famous ones. So this was The Sea Wolf by Jack London.
I've seen it. I've not read it.
Okay.
I've read his other books. He wrote Call of the Wild, yes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah,
that's a good one.
Yeah, Call of the Wild is a classic.
Right. Sea Wolf.
Yeah, The Sea Wolf.
Carry on. Why do you love it?
I mean, I always liked Jack London. I mean, just his style of writing is just really straightforward. Kind of almost punchy at times. Mm-hmm. This was like a really interesting meditation on masculinity, as well as civilization. Because it basically comes down to a sort of like a duel, not a physical duel, but like a conflict between the so-named Seawolf, which is this like barbarian ship captain, and then this like sort of hoity-toity quote-unquote gentleman passenger who accidentally ends up on board. So yeah, it was definitely gave me a lot to think about. Just that that fine line between like civilization and wilderness, and like how quickly human nature can slide from one to the other.
Hmm. If you're just tuning in, this is Ink and Worm on Radio Free Brooklyn. We're on all the socials. Make sure you check us out and join the community. My next book is The Art and Business of Teaching Yoga by Amy Ippoliti. And I don't know, I have some pretty strong thoughts about the yoga community and about teaching yoga. And I didn't expect to like this book, and I ended up loving it and taking lots of notes. If you are business-minded or enjoy yoga, you would probably enjoy this book. She goes into, you know, kind of the structure of being a successful yoga teacher. But even if that's not your goal in life, it's just an interesting read to be like, yeah, this is the world we live in, and this is like how people are successful as yoga teachers. I found it fascinating, and I always love when things surprise me, because I usually, like, for me, I feel like it's all the more powerful if, like, I don't think I'm going to like this, and then I love it. Just like, damn it. I don't know myself at all, but yeah. I'm glad to be surprised.
Definitely. My next book is The Watch by, I'm going to butcher this name, Joydeep Roy Bhattacharya.
Sound is okay to me.
Yeah, I apologize. Yeah. If anyone knows how to pronounce that correctly. So this was really fascinating. So it's a modern adaptation of Sophocles' Antigone,
mm-hmm.
Which I had read as a high school student. So this kind of takes inspiration from that, but then places it in the middle of the U.S. conflict in Afghanistan. And there's a quote on the front of the cover from the Wall Street Journal saying, like, this is the first great novel about the war in Afghanistan, and I think that's a perfect way to sum it up. I mean, just like, it's a tough read because it's, you know, it, the author really fairly covers like both Afghani and American points of view. And so you get like a really complex layered portrait of the conflict and just like all the different factors that go into it. And it's, I mean, it's depressing at the end of the day, just cause it feels like there's no way that there can be a resolution.
It's rough.
Yeah. But, yeah, if you can deal with that, I would highly recommend the book. And especially if you've ever read Antigone.
Yeah. And I would say if you don't know anything about the conflict over there, which is my case, it's just like a nice solid introduction to what's happening in the world.
Yeah, no, I would definitely, I mean, you know, I've always followed the war a lot, so for me it was a really great fictional take on it. But yeah, I would highly recommend it if you want to get a sense of just all the mess that is that conflict.
My next book is not heavy at all. It's The Big Bad Book of Botany by Michael Largo. Sorry. And I loved the illustrations. I loved, it's broken down kind of in terms of a reference book. It's very encyclopedic in its nature, alphabetical by plant, but it talks about, you know, the like what you can use this plant for and the history of the plant and describes the plant and any mythology around it. And I was, again, I don't own books, but this was a book where the illustrations were so beautiful and this like sections were so concise and easy to find that I was like, I want this book. So there you go.
Nice.
Apparently I'm a capitalist.
I mean,
aren't we all?
If we're going to buy something, it's not so bad to buy books. Worst things to buy for sure. My next one is Tinkers by Paul Daugherty. Have you read it?
Nope. I haven't read any of the books on your list.
It's okay. I mean, I haven't read any of the ones on your list. I guess we should trade once in a while.
This is such a good book. Next!
So this one's it's a pretty short read, but God, I mean, this is... I didn't rank these books, but if I did, I would probably have to put this at number one for the year.
Bam.
Yeah.
There you have it, folks.
Done.
Carry on.
It's primarily about the relationship between a father and a son. It's just such a powerful book. Beautifully written. Like every page I just absolutely loved. But these characters are just so richly drawn. And you really get pulled into their lives, and the ending was powerful.
You're all about the endings.
Yeah, I love. I mean, the whole journey was powerful, the ending really struck home, and I could not recommend it enough.
Nice. My next book is another creative companion book, The Crossroads of Should and Must, Find and Follow Your Passion by Elle Luna. And she kind of weaves a story of her own personal journey, and as well as like, where did should come from and where did must come from? And why are these kind of a lot of times we say, oh, I have to do this thing. But you don't. And I love the flow of the book. This is another one I read at the beginning of last year, so my memory's a little shady, but it's a very short read. It's 161 pages and there's lots of pictures. So it doesn't take long to read, but it was just fun to read and also inspirational in the sense that you know, my journey is not her journey, but I can be an artist and I can be creative and I can find pockets and spaces and, you know, these are the you know, finding that balance, I think, is valuable. If you're not getting paid for your art, to still find the space and time and resources to consistently create it, because that's what makes you feel alive and vibrant, I think is pretty important. And also tackling fear and vulnerability, which is every artist's, and I think, you know, every human's greatest challenges sometimes.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, so we got number 10. So my last book, this is another one that came into my hands really strangely. I was towards the beginning of this year, I was in the brutal Fitbit competition. I was trying to beat all my coworkers. So I was walking all the time, which meant I would go with these super long walks late at night. So I was on one of these walks where I think I walked from Battery Park to Harlem. And of course that I was walking through Central Park and I saw this book on the ground and picked it up and I was like, oh, free book. Well, what the hell? Might as well take it home. And this book was Under Tiberius by Nick Toshes. It's potentially very scandalous because it's a retelling of the story of Jesus Christ.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Touchy.
Yeah. He definitely got some flack when it came out, naturally. The premise basically being that Jesus is a bum who's propped up by a Roman general as a money-making scheme.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, naturally. And so that's like a good hook to get someone in. I mean, that's why I picked it up and brought it home. But it actually ends up being a really interesting piece about belief, and how you can come to believe in something that never was there in the first place.
Interesting.
Yeah.
My last book on my list is not a book. Oh no.
What?
You got some bonuses in there. There's still 10 books. It'll be fine. If you have really strong feelings, you can write me a letter and I'll find another book that I loved last year. But if you've been listening to the show, you've probably heard me mention that I've been listening to Harry Potter audiobooks by Jim Dale, the British narrator. And they are fantastic. Everyone says that. And I was not going to ever listen to them. And then somebody that I actually, you know, will give something a chance was like, no, really. And I'm saying that to you, really. If you haven't listened to the audiobook version of Harry Potter, just give it a try. I mean, even if you hate audiobooks, just give it a try because it is magical, obviously, because it's Harry Potter. But also, just it's fun. He does all the voices. And it's just a great story as the best stories are meant to be said out loud, I think. Like, storytelling is an oral tradition. And I think that it just adds a layer to the story to hear it. And you can put headphones in and walk around this busy city or wherever you are and go about your business, and no one will know that you're listening to Harry Potter.
Top secret.
And it's so fun because you're walking down this normal street and you're just like hearing about magic and remembering how much you loved the books. And it's just really, really wonderful. Highly recommend it.
I will say I have negative connotations with the audiobooks because I got in a car crash while listening to one of them.
Well, that's on you, yeah?
No, it was a icy mountain road in Vermont winter.
You were driving?
I was in the passenger seat. But, yeah, I spun out.
What was the book?
I don't remember which one it was.
It wasn't imprinted. That's crazy. I'm sorry that happened to you. But audiobooks are good. I don't like to listen to them while I drive, too. I will throw that out there. I listened to Dune on a road trip. And it was fine, but it was, I don't know, I like walking or, you know, creating while listening to audiobooks. I don't really like driving. So there's that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what's next? So now we're going to hear from Nasa, who was kind enough to also compile a list of her 10 favorite books. And we are going to be surprised because we don't have any idea what she's going to say.
Hello, this is Nasa Lozano, co-host of Ink and Worm, and I am here to give you my top 10 picks as far as books that I have read in 2016. So these are books that I think were either useful to help me get through the year or that happened to stick with me or in some way influence me throughout the year. All right, let's start here at number 10. Number 10 is one that I reread about once a year. It is Everyone Hanging Out Without Me by Mindy Kaling. And it's just basically her biography. It's one of my favorite books to read, though, because especially in a year like 2016, where I feel like it was a lot more challenging than anyone had thought that it would be, it's nice to remind yourself that people who have made it have been in similar spaces, you know? To know that someone like Mindy Kaling did go through a time period where, instead of writing the play that launched her into fame, she spent time rewatching old television shows with her best friend. So, number 9, Last Days of Judas Iscariot. And that is by Stephen Adly Gyurgis. He's just one of my favorite playwrights, and that play is a really good discussion about heaven and hell, the afterlife, and what it means to be redeemed. It is a story told through the eyes of Judas Iscariot, or rather through the eyes of a trial for Judas Iscariot. I should be clear there. And it has always been one of my favorites, and it has always been very touching and very powerful. So I highly recommend reading it if you get the chance. Number 8 is Gem and the Holograms by Kelly Thompson. I believe illustrations by Sophie Keppel and coloring by Victoria Robado. So Gem and the Holograms is, obviously, it's a comic book based on the 80s cartoon Gem and the Holograms. And I chose this one because, one, Gem is truly, truly outrageous. That is something I love saying, and I've always loved about the show. But two, unlike the recent movie that came out, which is not anybody's cup of tea, this comic does a really interesting thing with the characters. It puts them into a modern perspective. It has non-straight couples and female figures who don't fit body norms. And so it's a really great book. First of all, just really fun if you enjoy the series or have fond memories of the old series. But second of all, really great if you're looking for something to introduce to a young teen girl, someone between the ages of like 12 to 15, I think. It does a really good job of telling the story without dumbing it down and making it fun for everybody and adding in elements that are relevant nowadays. And I highly recommend it. I do. I was surprised to like it as much as I did, but I really, really enjoyed it. So, Gem and the Hologram. She is truly, truly outrageous. Number 7. There is a Monster at the End of This Book by John Stone with illustrations from Michael Smolin. As you might be able to tell with this one, it is a child's book. It is starring Grover from Sesame Street. And it's a really cute book. Many of you, I know I, grew up with it. And it's about essentially Grover freaking out because there's a monster at the end of the book. And spoiler alert, he's the monster. But it's a really fun book to read with kids. I've been babysitting a lot this year, so this book has haunted me, including a reading of it on the subway where I went into full Grover voice. And I just feel like, for me in particular, it captured an element of 2016. But I also think it's a really great book to have and to read with kids. So if you know anybody with kids, have them check it out. All right, number six, Batman Dark Knight Returns by Arthur Miller. I read this comic book in order to prepare for a lecture series that I was going to, and my goodness, did it not disappoint. So for people who aren't aware, The Dark Knight Returns is set several years in the future, in Batman's future, and Batman, who has been retired for a while, comes back to kind of try and fight crime and make everything okay in Gotham City again. And it deals with a lot of political issues and is this okay and vigilante and what does that mean? But beyond those elements, the lecture series has kind of opened my eyes to the fact that what the art of comic book making is. So it's a lot of things like the usage of panels and how panels are kind of like a music or your beat in a song, and what it means when you expand the panels or cut the panels or change the panels paging. And also it's a really brilliant way to integrate kind of norms, like story norms of the Batman series, into something new and revolutionary. I mean, anyone who knows Batman knows that The Dark Knight Returns kind of marks the beginning of Batman as we know him. And this lecture series opened my eyes to why that was so true in the first place. I have a lot more that I would love to talk about with this book that I just can't at this moment, but I highly recommend picking it up and doing a little bit of research, because if you're into comic books, this one is really important. Number five is She Kills Monsters by Quy Nguyen. Quy is a playwright who is blowing up right now, but it is primarily because what he does with his characters and with his plays are so interesting and unique. I would recommend any of Quy's plays, just picking up any of them, because he writes for a very modern audience and very modern characters, and his plays, despite being plays, feel like movies in what he does with them. They are usually about countercultures, and they're a lot of fun. She Kills Monsters deals with the damned coming out of hell and like taking over this one town. I highly recommend it. I highly recommend anything by him. Check them out. Number four, and this is number four because of its relevancy to me. It is Auditioning by Joanna Merlin. If anyone out there is an actor, a book like this is incredibly necessary. This is a book about how to audition, how to prepare for an audition, how to kind of get out of your head for any of it. It was particularly important to me in 2016, since 2016 is the year that I have left my full-time job and been embarking upon pursuing my acting career. So that's why this one got the number four ranking. Number three is Modern Romance by Aziz Ansari. This is a really good book about understanding romance, obviously, in this day and age. And Aziz took a lot of statistics and a lot of testimonial and discussed what it is to date nowadays as opposed to in like the 50s or 60s when our parents used to date, and why dating seems to be so tricky nowadays as opposed to before. And it's quite a good look at what are the key elements in our society today. So talking about something as far as relevancy to our time, to 2016, this is something that I think on a more fun kind of social level is just cool to check out so that you can get an understanding of our generation. Number two, and this is a controversial pick, but I pick it nonetheless, Harry Potter and the Cursed Child by John Tiffany and Jack Thorne. This book has had so many people so very angry. which I both agree with and disagree with. I will not be giving spoilers. I will just say that it is a continuation of the Harry Potter series, in which we pick up with Harry Potter's youngest son, and his first, well, I suppose his years at Hogwarts. I don't think we go through all seven, but we go through a good deal of them. There are elements of it that, if you're a Harry Potter fan, will be gritting. And there are elements of it where, if you're a Harry Potter fan, it will be very exciting. I had to pick this book to be in this list because it is a continuation of the Harry Potter series. The excitement for when it came out was reminiscent of my childhood. It influenced, I think, a lot of people, or just affected a lot of people this year. So for me, this is one of the top books of 2016. And number one is one that many people have heard me talk about. It is A Bright Room Called Day by Tony Kushner. This is a book about just normal people in pre-war Germany and how they handled the transition into it being Nazi Germany. And it's a book about the consequences of inaction and the consequences of comfort. And considering our current political climate and considering what is going on in the world right now, I think that this book is the most relevant book a person can pick up in 2016. So I beg you to read it. It's an important play. See it or read it if you can. Well, that is all for my list. An honorable mention, by the way, is Why Does Mommy Have Tattoos, written and illustrated by Marilyn Rondon, who was on our radio show a couple of months back. So I would recommend picking that up if you have the chance. Other than that, I hope you enjoyed my list. I hope you get a chance to read one or two of those. And happy reading, 2017. Bye.
I did want to mention, I find it interesting that you asked me a question a couple weeks ago of if I had to pick nonfiction or fiction and only read that, which one would I pick? And I said fiction, and you said nonfiction, and none of your books were nonfiction.
False.
The Alaska one?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that was one of my favorites.
Okay.
That'd probably be number two.
But I had tons of nonfiction. So there's that. And thanks for listening. We hope that you guys have had a great start to 2017. Make sure that you love each other, because and yes.
And have a happy new year.
Yeah, hope well, it's already like that celebration is over, right?
I mean, the year
it just keeps going on all year.
The year's barely begun. You can still be happy.
And thanks for listening to Ink and Worm on Radio Free Brooklyn. If you have questions, comments, you can hit us up. My email is inkandworm@gmail.com. And also, I would love to hear what your favorite books were this year. And I will leave you with a word, take it or leave it, enjambment. Up the rice in the church where a wedding has been. Lives in a dream, waits at the window, wearing the face that she keeps in a jar by the door. Who is it for? All the lonely people. Where do they all come from? All the lonely people. Where do they all belong? Mackenzie, writing the words of a sermon that no one will hear.